So my name is Joshua Tota. Thanks for sticking around. I'm part of a research group called CHI, the Children's Environmental Health Initiative. We're a research, education, and outreach group that's based at Rice University and the Office of Research. So this afternoon I'm presenting on behalf of my co-authors from CDC, from Drexel University, and from three local health departments in North Carolina, Chatham County, Guilford County, and Orange County. All right? So in my talk this afternoon, I'm going to share with you guys a new tool that we're developing with CDC's Division of Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention. I'm going to talk a little bit about its development and kind of how we got to where we are now with the tool. I'll also share some results. We've been beta testing the tool with local health development partners in North Carolina, so I'll share some of the results, and I'll talk about some of our next steps, where we're going to go from here. Okay, so we're interested. So this tool is specifically focused on mapping chronic disease burden, right, because maps are a great way to show burden really quickly, right? We can see patterns in space and time. This is a map of the most common cause of death in the United States, and there's a lot of information there. But if we change scales, right, this is county scale now. We're looking at state scale. Previously, this is even more information, right, because counties aren't monolithic. So the idea is that we want to be able to map burden, like for heart disease and stroke, at smaller scales, spatial scales, but there are some problems, some challenges for doing that, right? So first of all, we need access. If we're talking about burden for death, we need access to kind of timely georeferenced death data, which is a challenge, is more of a challenge in some places than others. So that's step one. Second, we need a kind of a cadre of staff that have a set of tools that are kind of like Epi Plus, right? So they're standard epidemiological skills. But then there's also skills with data visualization, right, and statistics that are required to do this in a responsible fashion. Okay, so those are the first two kind of barriers. The next barrier is focused on the fact when we decrease spatial resolution, when we go to smaller scales spatially, typically our populations, they can get smaller, and our counts, right, for cases can get smaller as well. And the result of that is variability, and that's not something we want to show on a map. So we need another set of tools, right, to kind of perform smoothing, right, to generate rates with some degree of reliability. So I'm going to introduce this concept of using Bayesian smoothing, which CDC has already started to do. Has anyone ever been to CDC's Interactive Atlas for Heart Disease and Stroke? Right. So it actually has. It incorporates Bayesian smoothing already. It's just aspatial. I don't know if people can see this on the board right here, but we're looking at, this is for the state of North Carolina. We're looking at all heart disease deaths for men, all gender, excuse me, black, non-Hispanic. Okay? And the current rates are not smooth, right? You can see that little call-out circle on the left. I think I have a pointer here. Yeah, I travel with a pointer. So there's these are not smooth, and if you can look over here, you guys can't make that out. You're going to have to take my word for it. 26 of the counties don't have reliable estimates if you don't use smoothing. So for North Carolina, there's 100 counties. So that's, you know, more than a fourth of the counties you don't have estimates for non-Hispanic blacks. So it's an issue even if you're looking at data at the county scale. So if you want to go to the sub-county scale, it's even more of a challenge. Okay, now this is, once we've applied smoothing, we've reduced the number of unreliable counties to just one. All right, so it's a good thing to do this. And again, CDC is working on this. They're interested in this, and other people are interested as well. But I think there's kind of a felt need in local and state health departments to have tools that they can use on their own without using this web interface, using their own data. So that's where the RST came about. The RST stands for the Rate Stabilizing Tool. Okay? So a lot of the tools right now that are designed to generate Bayesian smooth estimates are based in software, kind of specialized software. And the folks that we come into contact with a lot are people who are interested in mapping their data. So they're using a desktop GIS typically. So the first thing that we needed to do when we started to put this tool together was to design it in a GIS-friendly format, because the original code for this set of tools is written in R, which if you're a user is fine. But if you're not an R user, you probably want something else, particularly if you're using mapping software. You probably want to use another tool like Python. So this tool is designed in Python. It's completely open, right? It's designed right now for use in ArcGIS Desktop, but you don't have to use ArcGIS Desktop. You can use other GIS software if you like, whatever flavor you're interested in. But it integrates really well into the ArcGIS Desktop framework, and for most of our local and state partners, that's the GIS software they're using. Okay? Another handy thing about the tool is it integrates age adjustment into the, so you input your data and you select your age categories and it'll perform the age adjustment on the data. And probably most importantly, because we're working in a GIS and because we're using Python as the native language, we can incorporate a fully spatial Bayesian smoothing approach, okay? So the previous example that I showed you for the CDC does not incorporate a spatial smoothing component. It's an aspatial Bayesian approach, right? It kind of uses shrinkage to move everything towards a global mean. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. But the point is that the tools we're using now allow us to incorporate this spatial smoothing approach, which is, we think, ultimately will be a good thing. Okay? So as far as the inputs, what's required for a state or a local health department or anybody to use this tool? You need individual level, in this case, since we're talking about death rates or estimates, you need individual level death data. So record level death data with age, and we also need a census identifier. So that gets back to that first original roadblock. If you're hearing me right now, that means you have to have someone actually geocoding your death data. Right? I don't know how many people are from states right now. If your vital stats department does automatic geocoding of death data, I've worked with a lot of states, and a lot of states have been through our GIS training program, and that's not the norm, right? So we know that's not the norm. But we hope that this will be good motivation to start to build that capacity within health departments. Because ideally, you're getting data from an authoritative source within your health department or your state, and the data are geocoded to a high quality, right? Because that's the thing with geocoding. It can be good or it can just be okay or it can be just be bad. It really depends on the processes that your data are taken through. So we realize that's not a small feat, but it is a requirement right now for the tool. There's really no way to get around that. All right? So we need a geographic identifier, and also ideally you will parse out, in these cases, we worked with our partners in North Carolina, so they actually subset the data and using ICD codes to kind of categorize death, right? So in this case, we're talking about heart disease death, and I think we conform with the CDC's standards for heart disease. Okay? Also, because this is spatial, we actually need some geometry, so we need a shapefile to do this. We use a shapefile because it's a kind of a ubiquitous spatial data format. If you're interested, if people are interested, we could certainly use other formats, like a geodatabase. This is kind of the lowest common denominator for spatial data. Okay? And this is a screenshot of the interface. If anybody's used ARC Toolbox before, the geoprocessing tools, this is kind of the standard look and feel of those tools. Right? So you have a wizard that guides you through the process, and you have a series of drop-downs where you set your parameters for the tool. Okay? So this is run kind of in the geoprocessing context. That means if you're familiar with geoprocessing, that means kind of a record of all the processes that you run is kept. So you have a log file of everything that happens with diagnostics. If something goes wrong, you can kind of look through that diagnostic file, log file, and hopefully figure out what went wrong. So this is a practical tool, ideally. All right? Okay. So the RST tool uses what we call empirical Bayesian smoothing. There are two types of smoothing that are performed. One is the non-spatial, okay, and that generally smooths everything to a global average, right? Our statistician calls that shrinkage, okay? So if you're talking about the state, it's going to move everything to the state average or global average. If you're talking about a county, a group of tracts within a county, it's going to move everything towards that county average. Okay, that was the first step. We had to figure out how to do that in Python before we could move to the next step, which is adding a spatial smooth, okay? And what that actually does is it looks at neighbors, right? And I'll talk a little bit about how we define neighbors, but it creates a neighborhood, and the neighborhood rate is informed by the global rate. So it's using kind of two figures, one a local average and one a global average to kind of estimate or better estimate the values for a particular unit of study. Okay? Those are the two flavors that are provided in this tool. Okay? So we use a MCM to estimate age-adjusted rates. We use a gamma distribution for each age group at each location. And in this case, we're talking about census tracts, which is pretty cool to think that you can estimate age-adjusted smooth rates at the tract level. And we think we can even go lower. We think we can go down to the block group. Okay? So we also generate a 95% confidence interval to compare the rates. Those are just for the spatially smooth rates, so we can get an idea of how each one is performing. Okay? We've also decided that if there's no population value for a particular unit of census geography for our area of interest, we force there to be one of at least five. So there can't be a population of fewer than five in any of our units. Okay? We've also had to make some choices because we can run these MCM simulations for a long time, and they can take a long time to run. So we've we've done a sensitivity analysis and looked at kind of the appropriate number of samples to run before saying, okay, that's enough. We're going to stop. This is close to convergence here at this point. So we've set it to 5,000 samples. And that's really based on some of our test work with the state of North Carolina, which has about 2,000 census tracts across the state. Depending on your machine, it can take 5 to 15 minutes to run this, which is pretty quick. Our choice for using this particular distribution and also for limiting it to 5,000 samples are really driven by practical matters. We don't want this to take too long to run. Okay? So what do you get? At the end of this process, you get three text files, formatted text files. One has your rates along with some information on the upper and lower bounds for those rates, and there's also an alert. Okay? You also get the population age structure for your state of interest and the standard age structure as well. Those are kind of useful to check your results once it's all done. Okay, so you get an age-adjusted rate for free, all right? You get the non-spatial smooth age-adjusted rate, and you get the spatially smooth age-adjusted rate. So you get those three measures with each run of the tool, and you get the upper and lower boundaries at the 95% confidence interval for both your smooth rates. Okay? And the whole logic behind creating this tool using Python is because you're already there. Now, to map it, you're one step closer to actually mapping this data and analyzing patterns in space. Okay? So I think this is no smooth. For the state of North Carolina, heart disease death, 2006, 2008, we've recently got 10 additional years of data, so this is 3 years of data that we're using at the census tract level. And I removed the values from this, just so you can see relative low to high. These are quintiles. And you can see we've got a couple of tracks with unstable rates using 3 years of data. It's symbolized blue here. You can see it better like that. Okay? So those are our census tracks with unstable rates using the unsmooth age-adjusted rates. Performs pretty well. It certainly makes that age adjustment much easier. Okay? Here's our non-spatial smooth, okay? And again, these are age-adjusted rates. These are quintiles again. And you can see we've reduced those cyan-colored bright spots there, which aren't showing up really well on the screen. Those are our census tracts with unstable estimates. Now for the spatial smooth, you can see it looks like we've got a couple more, right? Unstable tracts. We do. We started to look at that, compare the smooth rates with the unsmooth rates. If you look over here at the top, what we're mapping here is we're mapping individual county or local estimates to statewide estimates. And what you can see here in this area on the top, this is the non-spatial model. It's not showing up well on the screen, but you can see where a lot of values are being forced. That's the mean. That's the average. That's the global average for the state. It's kind of artificially forcing some of those estimates to be closer to the mean. Maybe that's okay, but it's just something we need to be aware of because that's less of an issue when we're looking at the spatially smooth because we're looking at a neighborhood that we've defined. And in this case, we define neighbors as first-order Queens adjacency, so either a point or a line is touching for these census tracts. So you can imagine that might be an issue if we're talking census tracts are size is approximately related to like density. The higher the population density, the smaller a tract will be. The more sparse the population, the larger a tract will be. So you can see that has implications if we're talking about neighbors based on adjacency. Okay? So we've tested it with our Intrepid North Carolina teams, and they can actually use it. They use it well, and they've given us a lot of valuable feedback, right? So they're kind of like an expert cohort. They can tell us really quickly and help us troubleshoot issues. They also provide us valuable information. They can tell us whether or not estimates are actually good or if some of them are questionable, and they've done that on a couple of occasions. So they can help us troubleshoot why the model performs better in some areas than other areas. Okay? And what we found in, again, this is from working with our local health departments, is this tool is especially useful where you have areas where there's a mix of urban and rural populations, which is the case for many counties in North Carolina. It's the case for many counties across the United States, I would imagine. So we're hopeful this tool will continue to be useful. And this is actually output from the three of the counties are represented in the authorship list, but these are five additional counties from the region that we've used to test this tool out. Okay, so the next steps we're going to continue to test and document. We'll be sharing some of these exciting results shortly in publication. We'd also like to add output for sex and age adjustment in the tool. And we'd like to provide more options for neighborhood definition. So right now, neighborhood is just based on first-order adjacency. Maybe you want to consider second-order adjacency, or maybe you want it to be distance-based. Right? We'd like to have those options in the tool. And we're currently working with our partners to operationalize. How do you actually make this happen? And how do you answer the tougher questions about getting quality georeference data from the state? Okay. So I'd like to acknowledge the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Heart Disease and Stroke, National Association of Chronic Disease Directors, and all the past state and local health departments and present that work with us on our GIS capacity building projects. Yeah. Questions?
So yeah, we have time for a couple questions before our next speaker. Does anybody have a question for Joshua?
I had a spinning, and I just wondered how long it would take to actually learn that process and be able to feel confident that what you're doing is generating correct data.
Yeah. Melinda, we can teach you how to do that in a day. We can teach you how to run the tool in a day. What's harder, what we're really working with the partners on, is giving you the tools to explain that to a lay audience or to a manager. Like, how do you actually say, you know, this is the difference between a spatially smooth estimate and a non-spatially smooth estimate? And when's the appropriate time to use one or the other? That's really the hard part. And that's what we're working hard to do that right now. You know, given the folks that are testing the tool, you know, good language and information so that they can actually explain, you know, what's been done and also so they can make good choices. Yes. So you can add custom toolboxes. This tool is implemented as a toolbox. So you simply add it as a toolbox. So maybe in the session later on, I can talk about this more. But we've developed this tool with North Carolina because we had access to their death data. Now we have access to 10 years of death data. But we're looking to expand participants in this program to other states with interesting populations. The only requirement would be that you have access to geocoded death data, and we don't even need to see it. Just you need to have access to it to effectively use the tool.